Hey, this is Ron Jacobs, and welcome back to Endpoint TV. We were just in the middle of a long conversation with Matt Winkler that was going so well. I just didn't want to stop him in the studio. So we decided to split it into two parts. So today we're going to pick up where we left off with the second part of our discussion. And when we started, we were right in the middle of talking about this M of N activity that you might build. And Matt was describing, sort of the runtime side of it, right when I interrupted him and told him how, yeah, I could get the runtime, but I'm not sure I know how to build the designer. So that's where we're going to pick up at. Let's go back to the studio and pick up right there.
In and send emails out or do whatever's going to
So you
happen.
know what I think? It seems like, for me, it's all, I can totally imagine how to build the runtime side of this. You know, all the logic for creating my activity and scheduling the children, all that. I could totally do that. I could do that in a heartbeat. What scares me is writing the designer for it. You know, and it's maybe I'm like a lot of guys that you know. It seems like there's some guys who are WPF guys and they totally get that part, and there's some guys who are. You know, it's like the difference between a cosmetologist and a gastroenterologist or something. You know, it's like somebody knows how to make things pretty and look great, and you
I don't
know,
know if I'd go with that one.
Okay, plastic surgeon. Okay,
Okay,
right.
fair
Okay,
enough.
they're smart. I'm not saying they're dumb. I mean, they're smart people. They know how to make stuff look really cool with WPF, right? And I know how to work on the guts, but you know what I mean? And so I guess a lot of guys don't feel like they can bridge both sides of the world. I mean, you've had to come. I don't think you were a WPF guy before you did this.
I was not.
Yeah, so how was that like?
Yeah, so that was one thing. Early on, we kind of looked and figured out how we should go about building the designer. And we thought, hey, we've got a couple of options available to us. There's the approach that we took with WF3, which we based on top of WinForms. And with WF3, the way we built the designer was basically we built a lot of it from scratch on top of WinForms. But basically, we had a canvas and we started painting and we figured out where to lay things out. And, we were doing most of the work there. We said we could do that again. But WPF has evolved. At the time when WF3 was being developed, WPF was coming along at the same time. And so, that was would have been a big risk to kind of take dependencies between those two because both of them were changing. Now WPF has shipped. It's settled down from those early days. Those folks who remember the Avalon and Indigo days back before PDC-05. But so we looked at that, and the nice thing about WPF is that there was kind of a very rich support for a bunch of these kind of layout-y drawing and composing hierarchies of visuals. And so that kind of fit very, very nicely with what we wanted to do, kind of from an architectural perspective, from capabilities that we're looking for and that we'd prefer not to build because we know about workflow really a bunch. Doing all this other stuff, we could figure it out, but it'd be great if somebody else could do that. And so that led us down the path of using WPF. In terms of what we then had was the problem you alluded to, which is, for instance, myself, I'm not much of a UI guy. My background primarily before I came to Microsoft was, BizTalk and, service work and stuff like that. So, I could certainly put together some visuals, but
That's why we write console apps for demos,
right? And that was something that we had to kind of get up to speed on pretty quickly. Everybody learns a little differently. Some folks like to dive into samples. Some folks like to just start looking at code. I tend to kind of go down the book route. And so there were two books that kind of really helped me out on it. Chris Sell's book and Chris Anderson's book. Both of those were kind of really good books that finally made the kind of the zen of WPF click. In terms of, hey, this is that's when I finally got data binding in WPF, which is
See.
something that for me I had kind of because I never had a WPF project. I had never kind of had to force myself through learning it. And so every time I'd kind of try and read through it and figure it out, I was always kind of like, okay, I kind of get it.
Yeah.
I'd do like one sample or something, and then it kind of all would be gone.
Yeah.
But it was kind of when reading through Chris Sell's book, especially, that was kind of when it finally kind of clicked with me.
Well, that's an important point, by the way, that notion when you said the Zen of WPF is there's, with any technology, whether it's WF or WCF or whatever, there's sort of a Zen to it. I mean, there's a philosophy that the product was built on that came from the designers or the people who created the thing. And there's sort of the mechanics of using it, like here's the API and you make sure you do it this way. If you just get the mechanics but you don't get the Zen, you just will struggle with it. You know, I really believe that. You have to understand both sides of it.
And I think the other thing that can happen sometimes is you basically then start replicating the patterns of whatever you were familiar with.
Yeah.
In the new one. You know, similar in the way when we transitioned into .NET.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of folks kind of came into .NET and they were still writing the same old stuff they were doing before. They had a bigger set of libraries to call.
Yeah.
But kind of they weren't taking advantage of kind of the rich OO structure and capabilities.
Just like you can build a WPF app that looks very much like a WinForms app the way it works.
You could certainly kind of go down that path.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing that we kind of pushed on. And really, we set out on the designer team with two or three kind of key things in mind. One was we actually had to build tooling so that people could build workflows. That's probably the, you know, if we're a tooling team and we don't do that, we may have a problem.
okay.
You know? So that was kind of, you know, we certainly had to do that. And then we had two other things that we wanted to really, really kind of nail along with that.
Right.
The first one kind of falls out as a result of building the tooling, and that is you have to create an extensibility story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't understand the entire universe of potential activities that can be created.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to make sure that when those activities are created, that you can have a good visual experience on top of it. Mm-hmm. And we can do a lot with default. We can kind of say, hey, if you don't do anything and you just create an activity, we will do X, Y, and Z. And
by the way, it's not bad. We should set the expectation that a lot of people will build like their code activity or whatever. It takes a few in arguments, and you don't have to build a designer for it. You can just use the property grid, and it's a reasonable experience for another developer to use.
Right. And so we wanted to, when we built the tooling, we wanted to have a reasonable experience because custom activities are a fact of life with workflow. But then we wanted to make it a small stepping stone to kind of go from kind of that default experience into customizing that experience.
Mm.
And I'll come back to why we might want to customize that experience. The other goal that we had was we wanted to make rehosting easier.
Yeah.
So rehosting is this idea, and it's unique within kind of most of the .NET framework in that the tooling for workflow actually ships in the framework because workflow is a very visual thing, and there are a number of folks who like to be able to put that visualization in their app,
mm-hmm.
and we refer to that as rehosting. In WF3, the way I like to describe rehosting in WF3 is that we built tooling inside of Visual Studio. And then we figured out via a sample how we could host that also inside of a WinForms app. We wrote a very nice 15 to 20 page MSDN white paper and about a 12,000 line sample that walked through doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And folks did it.
Yeah.
Like this, it was hard. It was kind of painful. But a bunch of people, a bunch of customers took that on because they really liked this idea of visualizing a workflow to the consumers and the users of their applications.
Well, that says something about how important this is if people are willing to go through that pain to get there.
And we saw a lot of ISVs really kind of latched onto that and put that into their apps.
Yeah.
But we kind of knew that was a little bit of a tricky proposition.
Right.
And so we wanted to really make that substantially easier.
Yeah.
So that there wasn't a kind of this huge conceptual leap you had to make, more than a leap, more like a mountain to climb to get the workflow designer into your application. So those were the three goals that we kind of set out for. Those were the three things we really like. If we can deliver these, we're doing okay. So building the tooling, that was something the team just did. Yep. For most of the release. But then the second thing that we wanted to focus on again was that customization experience, that extensibility experience of building a custom activity designer. We wanted to make that really easy. And there's two reasons why you might want to build a custom activity designer. One is the default experience gives you a box, and then it relies on the property grid in Visual Studio to render all of the properties and their values. Mm-hmm. So it's a very property grid-centric editing experience. This is very similar to what you get in things like WinForms and Cider, the WPF designer. Mm-hmm. I click on a button, I go down to the property grid, and there are the, you know, N number of properties I can configure.
Right.
With workflow, what we had heard is that there were some set of properties. There might be kind of a couple kind of emblematic arguments to an activity that they wanted to put that on the design canvas so mm-hmm. that I could, you know, at a glance, I could see, hey, this value is set to 5 mm-hmm. or, you know, true or whatever. As well as kind of be able to edit it in the context of the workflow without having to go to the property grid.
Right.
So that's one class of customizations.
And in fact, I've had some people who have rehosted the designer say, we didn't even show the property grid because we think it's too confusing for people.
Right, right. And so in that case, even more so, you may want to put something on the canvas.
Yeah.
Because... you know, especially in a rehosting case where you have kind of higher level activities,
yeah,
you've already, you know, the knobs are very, you know, probably coarse grained at that level,
yeah, like
you have just a couple of sets of knobs that have you know well understood settings,
yeah,
and those are the choices you want someone to make,
right, right.
So we wanted to make that simple. The second thing that you want to do when you're building a custom activity designer is that you've built a custom composite activity. Mm-hmm. You've built an activity who's responsible for scheduling the execution of its child activities. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you need some type of visualization for that. And that's where it's hard to have a default.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard for us to intuit or understand anything about how you're actually going to schedule these things. So
right.
Does a parallel layout make sense? Does a sequential layout make sense? If we did a sequential layout for your flowchart, that wouldn't make any sense if
yeah.
you built a flowchart style activity.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make that easy.
Right.
And so we set out kind of the canonical thing that we wanted to do. We wanted to be able to build the designer for the try-catch,
mm-hmm.
right? So that incorporated everything. I had a try up here, which had, so that was the composite. I had the catch down here where I wanted to have configuration on the catch.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a collection of catches if you look at the try-catch activity.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing, which was also displaying collections of things, right? Because that's what a sequence does. A sequence displays a collection of things. That was kind of and then on each catch, what you'll want to be able to do is customize what exception am I trying to catch here? What's the type of the exception? And that was kind of our canonical, hey, I can draw on the left side of the whiteboard. This is what I want it to look like. What's the experience for me to author this? And kind of how do we make that as simple as possible?
Hmm.
And so really, when you think about building a custom designer, you're building a WPF user control. It just happens to inherit from Activity Designer is our base type of choice.
Yeah.
That's what's going to give you the box. Inside the box, you can do whatever layout you want to do. And then the three kind of additional things that we layer on top of that come in the forms of controls that we've written to make it easier.
Mm.
And there's three controls. There's workflow item presenter,
mm-hmm.
workflow items presenter with an S,
mm-hmm.
And then the expression text box.
Right.
Expression text box, I'll take that one. That's the easiest.
Yeah.
That's where you want to be able to display an expression.
Yeah.
I want to type in an argument. I want to type in the formula I want to use to compute an argument. I want to type in the condition that I'm going to loop on. What's going to happen in Visual Studio is I'm going to get that VB editing experience where I get IntelliSense and those types of things. And then in the rehosted case, we're not able to provide that VS experience because we have a bunch of dependencies on VS for that specific component.
Right, right.
So that's expression text box. That's
okay,
the easy one.
Easy.
And then what we found was that, so WPF gave us the ability to do all the layout. It gave us already a set of controls that we could then bind to underlying things mm-hmm. on the activity. So, for instance, when I was displaying that catch and I wanted to show the exception type, well, I could go ahead and create a drop-down box, and I could bind it to a list of exceptions, and I could populate the drop-down box with a list of exceptions. And when I select that, that was bound to the exception type property.
Right.
Right. Right. And so, just by using WPF, we got that part of it that mm-hmm. you could kind of very easily take the WPF isms and compose those when I'm building an activity designer. And we did some work underneath to make sure that we had the right things that you could bind to.
Yeah.
But then we had two things that we didn't really see kind of an out-of-the-box WPF designer for, WPF control for. And that was this idea of I have a hole in my activity, right? And I need to be able to drag another activity into that, and that's going to wire that up for me. So in the try, I need to put something in the body of the try, right? So how do I, when I'm authoring that designer, how do I indicate, hey, this is a place where I can go ahead and drop
your
activity.
Thing here, right?
Yeah, like put something here.
Yeah.
And what we started out with was, well, what do we need to do just to make this work, right? And what we needed to do to make it work was we had, something where we detected on drop. Mm-hmm. In the on drop, we figured out, hey, what have you dropped? We'd materialize an instance of the thing that was dropped because we assume that you encode the type that you're dragging. We would instantiate that instance. We would add that into the model of the workflow, so that would wire it up underneath. And then we would have to figure out something to display there. As workflows compose, so do their designers, right? When I have an if activity, if I have a write line inside of the then, I want to see the write line designer.
Right.
So then we would have to make sure that we would pick up that designer and display it, right? So that's the work we have to do regardless. Mm. We took that work and we wrapped that up into the workflow item presenter. The item presenter just indicates this is a place inside of a designer where you expect someone to be able to drop something, right? And there's a couple of other, there's some subtleties to that as well in terms of, we also take care of if you select it and hit delete, if you drag things between different item presenters. If I want to move from the then of this if over to the body of a try catch, yeah. I can go ahead and do that. And we created the workflow item presenter for when I have a single instance of an activity. Mm. That I want to be able to drag and drop into. So if you have something like a 2 of 3 activity where I'm going to have 3 things, you could use workflow item presenter. If you look at things like our for each designer or while designer, if else, those are all examples of activities that have a known set of places where you can drop an activity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the workflow item presenter. The second set of problems that we encountered, so where are we at when we're building our try catch? Mm. Kind of going back to that sample. Well, now we can display the body of the try.
Yeah.
For an individual catch, we can display an expression if we wanted. We can display a drop-down list of the expressions to choose. But how do we handle that collection of catches? Okay. All right. Let's go back. What do we need to do here now? Well, we need to have a collection of these things because that's what the underlying OM has.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be able to display that collection, so we need to lay those out somehow. So let's just say we'll use a stack panel and say, I'm going to lay these out. But then we need to support a couple of behaviors, right? We need to be able to insert into that collection at an arbitrary spot in the collection. I may want to put it at index 0, 1, 23, or 5.
Yeah.
I need to be able to reorder within the collection. Mm-hmm. If you think about a sequence, that's very important. Yeah. I no longer want this to be the last thing in the workflow. I want it to be the third thing.
Right.
And so, again, we took kind of a bunch of work that we would have had to do to enable that for sequence, and we wrapped that up into a control. That's what Workflow Items Presenter is for. It's where you have a collection of items that you want to have displayed. So something like sequence is kind of the classic example of that. Parallel is another example. Mm. And in terms of, so those are the three basic building blocks of building an activity designer. And then we stepped back and we said, okay, how have we done in terms of making it easier? Because that was, let's go all the way back to the beginning. Why are we doing this? We want to make this easier. And what we found was we were able to, for instance, write a very simple sequential sequence activity designer in under 60-ish lines of XAML. Right?
Yeah.
Right? I would say, hey, I have a grid. I have a workflow items presenter. I bind it to the activities collection on the underlying, the sequence activity type. I'd like to display some things between each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the item type that I'd like to have allowed. And then we got a little fancy because we also said something like, hey, I'd like to have this animation as well.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like when you move it, we move everything around.
Right, right.
This is where people who are a little more UI-focused than myself stepped in to help out and come up with these things. We had a couple of really good designers that we worked with that kind of did helped us out with a bunch of the UI stuff.
Well, and I have to say, you know, I think when you said, is it easy? I'll put it this way. I can do it. And I mean, you know, when I and we have actually in our Introduction to Workflow Hands-On Lab, it's part of the Visual Studio 2010 training kit. The portions of the lab that deal with the designer, I think you wrote those initially.
Probably.
Yeah. But it's really cool because it takes you all through this process of building your designer, you know, and dealing with workflow item presenter and items presenter, and you know, you build the pre-post sequence activity. Remember mm-hmm. that one, right? And then we even take you through rehosting the designer and working with the whole thing. It's the kind of thing where you know almost anybody can sit down and do it in relatively short order.
Right. The thing that we saw that was really fascinating was in V1 in WF3.
Yeah.
Our activity designer code, we went and looked at the lines of code we had involved.
Yeah.
We had about 800 lines of code in the sequential designer.
Right.
That was built on top of a base class called composite designer that mm-hmm. was about 1,500 or so lines of code. And when you look through those lines of code, they're pretty complex. I'm doing a bunch of layout. I'm measuring children. I'm figuring out where I should kind of put these lines and the bounding boxes. And it's pretty tough code.
Yeah.
In WF4, the sequence designer, we could easily represent in about 60 lines of XAML. The number of conceptual taxes that we had to ask somebody to pay along the way were less.
Yeah.
And so we feel pretty good about that in terms of trying to make that a little easier.
Right.
In terms of building activity designers, so that when you do build a custom composite designer or a custom composite activity, kind of you don't stop yourself from using that just because I can't build the designer.
Right. Right.
Now there are still places where it gets pretty difficult. If you wanted to build a state machine, you can go check out the source code now. There's a little bit of code involved in that.
Sure.
You know, and that's something we could certainly kind of bring into the framework as well and kind of evolve. You know, right now we have kind of those three basic controls. You could imagine us kind of evolving those or adding to those to make things like the freeform case easier.
Yeah.
You know, that's certainly something we may think about doing.
And there's always vNext, right?
There's always vNext. That's what I'm busy with today.
Dude, thanks so much for showing up here on Endpoint TV and appreciate all the hard work you guys did. Look forward to the next one.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me and, you know, let me come back sometime.
We'll have you back, man. All right. Hey, we'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.